The argument did not sound dangerous at first. Raised voices, sharp words, the kind of moment people expect to end with someone walking away. Antonio Arredondo stood beside his car in a California parking lot, his children close enough to hear every word. A parking space had turned into a confrontation. No one saw a weapon. No one expected one. Then the man walked back to his vehicle. Seconds passed. Not enough time to calm down. Not enough time for anyone to intervene. He returned holding a gun. The children screamed before the shots finished echoing. Antonio fell where he stood, his body hitting the pavement in front of his family. The shooter drove away, tires squealed, silence followed. Police would later describe it as a dispute that escalated. Prosecutors would call it an act of rage armed with lethal force. For Antonio's children, it became the moment their lives split in two. This story begins after the trigger was pulled, when the damage was already done and nothing could be taken back. Chapter 1. The moment it broke. The parking lot sat between everyday places, businesses people visited without thinking, apartments where families lived ordinary lives. On that evening in 2022, there was nothing unusual about the setting. Cars moved in and out, people carried bags, children waited, bored and restless. Antonio Arredondo had his children with him. They stayed near the car as he handled the task of parking and preparing to leave. According to later statements, the dispute began when another driver challenged the space Antonio was using. The exchange started with words, nothing physical, no threats reported at first. Witnesses described the tone shifting quickly. What began as irritation turned into confrontation. Voices rose, the argument drew attention from people nearby. No one stepped in. This was still within the range of everyday conflict, the kind that usually ends with frustration and separation. Antonio did not leave the area. He remained near his vehicle. His children stayed close enough to see his face and hear his voice. At no point did witnesses report that Antonio displayed a weapon. There was no indication he was armed. The other man broke away from the argument and walked to his vehicle. Some witnesses later said they believed the encounter was over. The separation suggested an ending. It was a false one. The man opened his car door and retrieved a handgun. This action would later become central to the case. Prosecutors would argue it showed intent and choice. The defense would argue fear and escalation. What mattered in that moment was speed. He returned toward Antonio. The distance closed fast. There was no warning shot, no final exchange. Multiple rounds were fired. The sound cut through the parking lot. People screamed. Children cried. Antonio was struck and fell to the ground in front of his family. His body landed hard on the pavement. Witnesses described blood pooling quickly beneath him. Bystanders scattered. Some ran for cover, others froze. Several people called emergency services. Dispatch records later confirmed multiple calls reporting a shooting with children present. The shooter turned and walked back to his vehicle. He got inside and drove away. No attempt was made to render aid. No words were exchanged. He left the scene within moments of firing the last shot. Silence followed, broken only by panic. Paramedics arrived within minutes. Police units followed. Officers secured the area and began pushing people back. Antonio lay motionless on the ground. Paramedics attempted life-saving measures, but the injuries were severe. He was pronounced dead at the scene. His children were pulled away by bystanders and officers. Witnesses later described their screams as the most disturbing part of the scene. Officers noted their presence in reports, documenting the immediate trauma. The area was sealed off with tape. Shell casings were marked and photographed. Bloodstains were documented. Investigators began separating witnesses, taking initial statements while memories were still fresh. The homicide unit was notified. Detectives arrived and began reconstructing the sequence of events. From the beginning, there was no doubt this was a murder. The open questions centered on identification and motive. By late evening, Antonio Arredondo's name was released publicly. Notification teams contacted family members. His children were taken to relatives. The parking lot emptied as night settled in, but investigators remained. Surveillance cameras from nearby businesses were identified. Some faced the lot directly. Others captured entry and exit points. Officers requested footage immediately, aware that time mattered. Detectives noted the absence of any prior relationship between the men. Early findings suggested they were strangers brought together by proximity and conflict. A parking dispute had become fatal. The weapon used was not recovered at the scene. The shooter was still at large. A description of the suspect vehicle was circulated based on witness accounts. Details varied, reflecting stress and shock. The case moved quickly from response to pursuit. That night, Antonio Arredondo's life ended over a few feet of asphalt. His children went to sleep without their father. Investigators began the work of turning chaos into evidence. The pressure had only just begun. Chapter 2, The Hunt for a Name. By the next morning, the parking lot was open again. Cars came and went. People parked where they always had. Only faint marks on the pavement hinted at what happened there the night before. For investigators, the scene was already moving into memory. Evidence now lived in reports, photographs, and video files. Detectives worked through the night reviewing emergency calls. Each call captured panic from a different angle. Voices overlapping, children crying in the background. Callers struggling to describe a shooter who was already gone. Dispatch logs locked the timeline into place. The shooting occurred just after early evening. The suspect fled within moments. Witness interviews continued into the next day. Officers revisited people who had been present, pressing for clarity. What did the shooter look like? How did he move? What kind of car did he drive? Answers varied. Stress blurred details. Memory fractured under shock. Some witnesses remembered the vehicle as dark. Others thought it was light-colored. One remembered damage on the rear. Another insisted the car was clean. No single description stood alone. Detectives turned to cameras. Businesses bordering the lot had surveillance systems. Some recorded continuously. Others only captured motion. Officers collected footage from every angle available. They watched hours of ordinary activity, searching for the moment violence entered the frame. One camera showed the argument from a distance, no audio, just figures moving. A break in the confrontation, a man walking away, returning, a sudden burst of movement, people scattering, a body falling. The resolution was poor, but the sequence was clear. Another camera captured the suspect vehicle entering the lot earlier that evening. The angle showed the shape of the car and partial plate characters. Enough to narrow the field, not enough to identify outright. Investigators built a working timeline. Arrival, argument, separation, shooting, escape. Each step tightened the window. Detectives confirmed Antonio Arredondo was unarmed. No weapon was found on him or in his vehicle. This fact would become critical later. At this stage, it shaped the direction of the investigation. Attention shifted to identifying the shooter. Vehicle databases were searched using partial plate data. Traffic cameras near the area were reviewed. Analysts tracked similar vehicles moving away from the scene around the relevant time. Days passed. Pressure mounted. Media coverage increased. Community vigils formed near the site of the shooting. Photos of Antonio appeared alongside candles and flowers. The presence of children at the scene intensified public attention. Police released limited information, careful not to compromise the case. They confirmed a suspect was being sought. They avoided naming anyone prematurely. Allegations remained unproven. Behind the scenes, leads came in. Tips from the public, some credible, many not. Each was logged, each was checked. One tip stood out. It referenced a vehicle matching the description seen on camera. The owner lived within driving distance of the scene. Investigators obtained a warrant to review additional footage from nearby roads. The vehicle appeared again, moving away from the area shortly after the shooting. This moved the case forward. Detectives located the suspect and took him into custody without incident. At the time of arrest, he was described as cooperative. No public statements were made regarding his demeanor beyond procedural facts. A firearm was recovered during the investigation. Prosecutors later confirmed it was consistent with the type used in the shooting. Ballistics testing was ordered immediately. At this stage, the case crossed an important line. Allegation began shifting toward evidence. Ballistics experts compared shell casings from the scene to test firings from the recovered weapon. The results confirmed a match. The firearm had fired the rounds that killed Antonio Arredondo. This finding was documented and verified. With this confirmation, prosecutors filed formal charges. The suspect was charged with murder under California law. The filing outlined the sequence of events and cited evidence collected during the investigation. The defense responded quickly. Attorneys argued the shooting occurred during a heated confrontation. They claimed their client feared for his safety. They emphasized the argument and emotional intensity. Prosecutors rejected that framing. They pointed to the act of leaving the confrontation to retrieve a firearm. They emphasized the return to the scene and the firing of multiple shots. In their view, these actions showed decision and escalation. The children remained a central concern. Investigators worked with child forensic specialists to document what they had witnessed without re-traumatizing them. Statements were handled carefully and corroborated through other evidence. The children did not drive the case. The evidence did. Court proceedings began with arraignment. The suspect entered a plea. Bail considerations reflected the seriousness of the charge. The courtroom filled with observers, including members of Antonio's family. As the case moved toward trial, pressure built on both sides. Prosecutors prepared to present a clear narrative, grounded in evidence. The defense prepared to challenge intent and interpretation. Outside the courtroom, Antonio's family waited. The legal process moved at its own pace. There were no shortcuts. The hunt for a name was over. The fight over responsibility had just begun. The case now rested in a courtroom where every action taken in that parking lot would be examined under oath. Chapter 3. The Verdict and What Remains. By the time the case reached trial, the facts were locked in place. The parking lot, the argument, the walk back to the car, the gun, the shots. What remained contested was not what happened, but how it should be judged. Prosecutors opened by grounding the jury in sequence. They did not rush. They walked the timeline step by step. Antonio Arredondo arrived with his children. A dispute began over a parking space. Words escalated. Then came the choice that mattered most. The defendant disengaged, walked to his vehicle, retrieved a firearm, and returned. That action, prosecutors argued, broke any claim of accident or panic. The defense framed the same moments differently. They described a heated confrontation that spiraled fast. They emphasized emotion, fear, adrenaline. They argued their client felt threatened and reacted under stress. They did not dispute the shooting. They disputed intent. The courtroom heard from witnesses who had been in the parking lot that evening. Some testified with certainty. Others struggled. Memory had faded. Trauma lingered. Prosecutors reminded the jury that human recollection fractures under shock. That was why physical evidence mattered. Video footage was played, grainy, distant, silent. It showed figures moving across asphalt, an argument, a break, a man walking away, returning, a sudden burst of motion, people scattering. The jury watched closely. The defense pointed out what the video did not show. The prosecution focused on what it did. Ballistics experts testified next. Their language was precise. Casings recovered at the scene were matched to the firearm seized during the investigation. The match was confirmed through established forensic methods. This was no longer allegation. It was proven evidence. Medical testimony followed. The cause of death was clear: multiple gunshot wounds. The shots were fired at close range. The injuries were fatal. The defense did not challenge this. The presence of the children hovered over every moment of the trial. Prosecutors referenced them carefully. No graphic detail, no emotional manipulation, just fact. Antonio was shot in front of his children. They witnessed the violence. Their lives were permanently altered. The children did not testify. Experts explained why: trauma, age, long-term psychological risk. Their experience was acknowledged without forcing them into the spotlight. When closing arguments came, the case narrowed to choice. Prosecutors reminded the jury that no weapon was found on Antonio. No evidence suggested he posed a lethal threat. They emphasized the gap in time between the argument and the shooting, the walk to the car, the retrieval of the gun, the return. Each step, they argued, was a chance to stop. The defense asked the jury to consider fear and perception. They urged them to imagine the chaos of the moment. They argued that fear does not follow logic, that emotion overrides reason. The jury deliberated in private. Hours passed, then more. Outside the courtroom, Antonio's family waited. His children stayed with relatives. They were shielded from the process as much as possible, but the outcome would still reach them. When the verdict came, the courtroom went quiet. The defendant was found guilty. The charge reflected the evidence presented. The decision rested on the jury's conclusion that the shooting was not a split-second accident, but a deliberate escalation. Sentencing followed later. Prosecutors outlined the harm caused, not just the death of a man, but the ripple effects. Children without a father, a family permanently fractured, a community shaken. The defense asked for leniency. They spoke of remorse, of consequences already faced, of a life that would now be defined by a single violent act. The sentence was imposed under California law. It carried weight. Years measured not just as punishment, but as accountability. Legally, the case ended there. For Antonio's family, it did not. In the months that followed, routines changed. The children attended counseling. Family members adjusted schedules. Holidays felt different. Ordinary moments carried absence. The parking lot returned to daily use. New arguments flared and faded. Most ended without consequence. Few people remembered the name Antonio Arredondo unless they lived close enough to the case to feel it personally. This story does not end with closure, it ends with cost. A life ended over a parking space. A moment of rage turned permanent. Children learned too early that safety can vanish without warning. The law delivered a verdict. It could not deliver a father back to his children. That is what remains.